We put this festival on, you bastards, with a lot of love. We work for 1 year for you pigs. And you want to break our walls down? And you want to destroy it? Well, you go to hell.
Fat Back 4, don't know what episode it is, we've stopped fucking counting, we really have, well I have, and the lads definitely fucking have. Liverpool 2, Newcastle 0, another win for the Reds. We've called this one Routine Reds, because it's becoming a bit of a habit, and we'll get on to that later, of how we're going about these games. The lineup. From the West Ham game, there's two changes. Lovren comes in for Matip. Henderson comes in for... It's gone completely in my head. Henderson comes in anyway. It's... Who was the four lads?
Milner.
He comes in for Milner. Two changes. Ian, I usually come to you first about the Liverpool lineup, but I just wanted to touch on Newcastle's outlook. Benitez comes back to Anfield yet again. Gets a great reception yet again. He sets up 4-5-1, I think we all thought he might do that, but I thought he had a few more attacking players on the pitch than I thought he would go with. Were you happy to see their lineup? Were you happy to see ours? Because you say the same thing every week, so I'll give you both teams this week.
Ours is what it is, mate, you know what I mean? I thought we would have started Matip at home over Lovren, because I've got a theory about those two. I think you combine them both, you've got a perfect centre-back. But I think Lovren's a better defender and Matip's a better footballer. So he tends to play Matip against sides that defend deeper. But that's my theory anyway. But he kind of shits on that by picking Lovren at home to Newcastle. Do you know what I mean? Because they were always going to sit deep. They've got some bad players. He's got no money, though, to be fair to him. So he's just loaning cast-offs from Chelsea and fucking... You know what I mean? They have got some bad players. John Joe Shelby's their best player and he was out. Matt Ritchie's probably the most creative player. They didn't pick him. And Rafa, even the most attacking Rafa, is still reasonably defensive. Do you know what I mean? If I was a Newcastle fan, thank fuck I'm not. But if I was, I'd rather we went and got beat 5-0 and had a goal than just turn up and roll over. I hate that brand of football. It's like Man U with no money. You know what I mean? I can't stand it. Have a go and get beat rather than just not have a go and get beat. Shit.
Matt, Ian thinks, you know, a team should show up, have a go, probably get beaten 4 or 5. I think the bit way Benitez may have looked at this was, you know, don't get hammered. Goal difference could be a big thing come the end of the season. But Ian has a point as well. He loses Shelby, who's probably his best player in midfield, and he doesn't pick Matt Ritchie. And Matt Ritchie is very creative. What did you reckon to that? Sorry, I'm asking you that as an ambulance goes past you there.
Yeah, I don't really know. I haven't watched too much of Newcastle this year, to be honest, so I can't really say too much about Matt Ritchie or Shelby. I mean, we all know Shelby can have a good game, but he can also have a shit one as well, which we saw last time he played us, where he scored a belter and then got an own goal, didn't he? Yeah, I mean, Benitez just done what he always does. It's what he knows to do against better teams, is trying to out-tacticals, keep it tight, get something on the break. And we've seen you just can't do this against this Klopp team. It's been our downfall for so long, and now going into these games against, like, my mates were texting me saying, now it's Benitez, he'll keep it tight, it'll be really difficult. And I wasn't even scared. I know. Klopp knows now with this team how it's set up, and the players know how to beat these teams. And it's not just always a moment of genius from Mo Salah, which he scored a goal, but it wasn't like a Coutinho goal that bails us out week in, week out. It was a great team goal, and we just grind these teams down. And I don't even get worried at the moment. Not even worried. The defence, our attack is just so complete in the way that they all attack. They all know what's going on. Like, if Bobby drops back, Salah, Mane, even Emery Chan was up there breaking into the space, they all just know what to do. And I'm just so comfortable watching us now. So I didn't even look at the Newcastle team. I wasn't bothered by anything they did. As I said last week, I don't even question our midfield or defence anymore. I'm just going into every game purely confident.
Yeah, Grizz.
And the ambulances as well.
Yeah, it's like, it's like a bleeding demo with Grand Theft Auto there at your end.
It's supposed to be
someone has just pointed out that the scrolling graphic says West Ham rather than Newcastle. I'll change that in a minute. I'm an absolute fucking mongo for doing that. Grizz, Matt's touched on it there that, you know, when we have, at LS7ZH asked, will we be discussing the United game? Yeah, we will touch on it at some stage, probably near the end when we look over Porto and United. But Grizz, Matt touches on it there that when Coutinho was in the team a couple of months ago and we had a game like this, if it got to 40 minutes, we might panic. We start giving it to him and looking for him to hit one in the top corner or to come up with some sort of magic. This one is different. We seem a lot more patient than what we're doing. When you seen the teams come out, were you happy with the lineup? You know, with the midfield, people probably would have thought, oh, maybe a Lallana in there because he's a bit more better than going forward than maybe Emery Jean has something along there. Or were you happy with it and you were confident? Because I think a lot of Liverpool fans are becoming very confident regardless of the game we're actually playing now.
Yeah, no, I said to you, I think in the WhatsApp that I think, personally, in my opinion, I think this is our strongest lineup. I think if everyone's fit and on form, I think this is the team that I'd pick. If there was a cup final tomorrow of any sort, this is the team I'd pick. So in that sense, I was very confident. We called this the routine Reds, and I love this. I love this win. And I love this win maybe a bit more than the others. And for that reason that you said, Gab, because in the past, we've had Phil Coutinho trying to, you know, we always look to Phil Coutinho to try to bail us out against these low box and teams that come to defend. To be fair to him, as Ian says, Rafa's not got much money to play with, so he has to do what he's got to do. But to be fair to him, he actually done a very clever thing, but most people try it. But I think Newcastle done it very well. Were they, in my opinion, I think Salah and Mane had their quietest games. And this was because of his doubling up on them. Like he had that young bloke Murphy, on one side, and I think he had Atsu on the other side, doubling up on Mane and so. But what I love about this current Liverpool team is we don't rely on just even Mane or even Salah. Bobby, Mane, and Salah, I think they had probably their quietest game. But then what happens? Ox comes alive. You know, we've got so many options now. Ox, Emre Can, as Matt says, was more far free, had far more space. So what happened was Newcastle doubled up on our danger men and then forgot that we've got weapons in central midfield as well. So enabled the likes of Emre, Hendo and Ox, who had far more freedom to, you know, showcase their talents. And I think they did. I think Ox's contribution was brilliant. And that's it. We've got so many contributions coming from every angle. I mean, even our fullbacks, we've been praising them. Not their best game whilst on the ball, but, you know, we were relentless still. And as Matt says, in the past, we've panicked and we think, oh, my God, where's our goal coming from? But the way we keep the ball and we keep sort of moving the ball left to right to left, the goal was bound to come. They were going to tie and we were going to sort of, we're pretty deadly. Let's just say we're pretty deadly.
Yeah, I think we're more than pretty deadly. Deadly in Ireland just means you're good. Not the deadly in the way you're talking about. But the defence kind of has a quiet day, which is I'm all for. If it has another 9 quiet days from now till the end of the season, I'm more than happy. 9 or 10, I forget how many fucking games are left. All I know is that we're 7 points clear of fifth as of today, which is great. But let's move on. Let's have a forget the defence for a minute, Parker for a minute, because I thought he had a really good game overall, and they were quiet. Even going forward, I think the two fullbacks just done a job, and they went outstanding, like you'd seen, say at home to West Ham. They done a little, slightly different job today. Ian, I'll come to you first. I want to go through the three in midfield, and I'll give you Jordan Henderson. Henderson comes back into the team after being out for the West Ham game and playing really well against Porto, wasn't it? Was it Porto?
No.
Yeah, it was one of them. But he comes back into the team, and a lot is made of Henderson. And he's probably 25 games a season because of injuries and stuff like that. And a few people, myself included, have questioned, is he going to be on the start, you know, on the starting 11 for Liverpool come next season if this injury process continues season on season? But looking at that game yesterday and taking it in isolation, what did you make of Henderson in the game he played as the deepest of Liverpool's three?
I thought he was the best player on the pitch by a distance. His switching of the play, his breaking up of the play, his positioning. He looked fit, physically fit. He was getting around a lot. He looked like he wasn't carrying any injury. And that's possibly because he's been out for a bit. Maybe he's a player that's going to have to be managed. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't play every... Can't play two games a week. So he's going to have to be managed so we can rest that fucking gout or whatever it is that he's got. Do you know what I mean? But
gout.
I thought he was outstanding. There was a couple of bits in the second half. There was one bit in particular where he broke up the play and then he got a back heel through his own legs, went past two players. And he's got loads of ability, Jordan Henderson. Don't get me wrong. Whenever I've been down on Jordan Henderson, it's a combination of things. It's the fact that he can't string a run of games together. I don't think the number six position is his natural game. I think his natural game is to get beyond the midfield. Do you know what I mean? So he's almost curbing his natural instincts to play that role. But he's very capable when he plays like that. He's as good as anyone in the country as a number six. Do you know what I mean? In terms of recycling possession, stuff like that. I think it's telling that Liverpool, Klopp in particular, is looking at an upgrade on him in midfield. That'll be a combination of the fact that he's not always fit and he can go missing sometimes, you know what I mean, play the safe option. But I think he was just given the instruction yesterday, go out and just stamp your authority on the game. You're far better than their midfield. Their midfield was really poor, do you know what I mean? I just thought he was excellent. Whether he can do it every week, I think history says he can't. I think he's only played 40 games in two seasons, I mean, injury-wise. So I think that's why we're looking at a number six instead of him. But he's an excellent player to have around a place, mate, if he plays like that every week. Excellent.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I just think my only argument would be, is he a player you base your home midfield around because of these injury issues?
No.
But he's even
without the injuries.
Say Cher is number six. You know, like, we're looking at players coming in and out of the team, and it is rotation. I don't think he's preferring one player over the other. He trusts them all, and he's rotating them. I think he's more the type that if you brought in a number six, you know, in fair to brackets, these fucking number sixes, but if you brought someone in to share that load of him, I think you get the best out of him over the season. I really do.
He didn't play the six really yesterday. Well, he did, but he was side by side with Chan. I thought they were both getting forward as much as one was covering back. I think they played it really well together. Where usually it's Hendo sitting at the back while Chan pushes on, but yesterday I just thought it was more Hendo to the left, Chan to the right, and other than that, they were both up and down.
I think with Jordan Henderson, right, the best way to look, the way I look at it, is he's all right doing it against the Newcastles and a shit Porto and stuff like that. If we got Real Madrid in the next round of Champions League, could you see him stamping his authority on the game like that, going round Toni Kroos and Modric and Casemiro? I don't. Not because he's not good enough. I think it's because it's a mentality thing with him. He don't think he thinks he's good enough. I mean, he's not as good as them, but you understand what I mean. He won't play his natural game. Whereas the players we're looking at, Henderson is Premier League class. We're looking at players that are European and world class. I think there's a difference in level.
Yeah. Stephen Kingsbury says here, a massive thing of the title in 2013-14 was when he became suspended, so he can't be that bad. I don't think we're saying he's that bad. I just think we're trying to...
He's not the same player now.
He's not, and I think the injuries, when he is on that kind of on the edge of that cliff, when injury is about to overtake him, he does look like he's a bit static in midfield and he can be played around. That's something I've said for a long time. He looks like he can be played around and you can get out of there back four.
He was active yesterday, though. He was everywhere, wasn't he?
Yeah, because
and quick.
Yeah, but I wanted to, like Ian has said, that he done a really good job there yesterday. The one thing that stood out for me yesterday was, I don't think he was level with Chan for most of the game. I think he was the one that looked to get the ball off, Lovren in particular. I think Van Dijk on the left-hand side is different. He seems to control and he wants to create from that deeper position.
I know you hate this, but the heat map had them exactly side by side.
It did it?
Yeah, go ahead, shake your head. It did. No, side by side.
I'd be interested to see how side by side they are when each of them have the ball. Because for me yesterday, Van Dijk from the left.
The heat map
side.
Is when they touch the ball.
It is when they touch the ball.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
what the heat map is.
To my eye, when I was looking at it, I thought Jan was a little bit further forward, and that's why I wanted to touch on you with. Henderson, for me, moved the ball really fast, and some of his vertical passes, as they call them, I thought were excellent to get the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain and Shan and Firmino and the other two lunatics out wide. I thought they were really good balls to get us going. They were really fast balls as well.
Mate, he's perfect. When you're playing three at the back and two sitting wing-backs, so effectively five, you need someone who can put the ball into the corner sharpish because it's spreading the play. If they all get into position and close ranks, it's harder to do. And he was excellent at that. Emery Chan doesn't do that. Emery Chan's not about spraying the ball.
No, he's more powerful, isn't he?
Power and running through the midfield, didn't he?
Yeah. Great.
Whereas Henderson can recycle it a lot better.
Absolutely. Great. Yeah. Ian liked the way he played. Matt Hardy were in more of a two with Jan. So I'm going to come on to Emery Jan. He's one booking away from a suspension. A lot of people thought that he might miss out because we didn't want to risk him. I thought he was quite good yesterday. I thought he was he held back a little bit, which is understandable. But I thought in the game overall, he got in when he needed to. We moved the ball when he needed to. And it was a 7 out of 10 game from Emery Jan. Would you agree?
Yeah, fair enough. It wasn't a brilliant performance from Emery, but Emery was okay. He was decent. He was good. I was very surprised. I mean, Klopp does this, doesn't he? We just can't read his mind. I mean, most people, and I think most coaches probably would have saved Emery, sort of not risked him for, like, sort of risking the yellow card and missing the United game, because we definitely need him in the United game. So I was surprised that he started. There's always been questions about when Emery and Hendo start together as a pair. People always put that out, don't they, that, you know, they can't play together. But I don't think their record's that bad. In fact, I'd say, I've read somewhere, I'm not a stats man like Matt. Matt, what does your heat map say about
what does your twat map say?
But record-wise, in terms of, our defensive record, I don't know if anyone who's watching sort of can back me up if you can't shut up and stay out of it.
I know what you're trying to say,
I think our defensive record, when Hendo and Chan play together, I think is very good. I think it's very good. And that's no coincidence, because they're both big lads, and they both, when they're fit, like you guys alluded to, Hendo actually looked free of injury yesterday. He looked very mobile. He was getting about. Yeah, and that's when he's at his best. And I agree, and I think most people agree, the six doesn't suit him. But that's not Hendo's fault. It's not Klopp's fault. Klopp just thinks he can play that role or do a job for him. And it's sort of telling now that Klopp's looking at sort of other players in that position. So it doesn't. But I think that's more to do with not Henderson's ability, but with his sort of injury record and his reliability. But imagine having Hendo as a squad player next season. I think that'd be a fantastic option to have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I reckon that's what he's going to do. If he buys a number six, Henderson could just replace Chan.
Yeah.
At the moment, other than Karius now, to an extent, Van Dijk and front three, everyone's a squad player.
Yeah, that's where I think Klopp is trying to get to. We've for years spoken about what's our best 11, what we got after 11, you know, how do we rotate? Are we okay for an injury or two? I think he's trying to walk this where he has a squad that, okay, he may have a preferred 11 because, you know, if you're going to win...
I think his horse is for courses. Every team he picks is so different.
I think
it's all about who we're playing.
I think he's trying to get to that, and I think he's trying to get to the stage where no matter who comes out of the team, somebody goes in. We don't have to change the way we play massively, but at the same time, if we do have to change, we're still as effective. You know what I mean? Ian's turned up twice on the screen in front of me, which is great.
That's because he's so fast.
Just two Ian's. I don't know what's going on. Now you're back. But Matt, let's move on. You're at the button in twice on these two, which is appalling behaviour. But I'll give you Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think this lad gets better and better for Liverpool. I think he's finding his feet a lot better. I've seen tweets today from Arsenal fans saying he's only this and he's only that going back in August when we signed him. This guy looks to me like somebody that could nail himself a place in this team if teams continue on. And on top of that, I'll ask you, does he move ahead of Lallana in a pecking order? if he continues on.
We've literally just touched on this, Gav. No one is secures a place in the team, especially in midfield. When he picked him over Lallana, I didn't look at him and think, oh, fuck's sake, you look at why. So we know Benitez and Newcastle are going to sit deep. We're going to probably sit two banks before, maybe even a four and a five. So what Oxlade-Chamberlain does more than Lallana is, he's direct. He runs, he gets past that first man in midfield and he runs at their defence and he draws a man. And that's what he did for the goal. He draws a man out of defence and he creates space in behind. What Lallana does is, it's a bit more, a bit more tricky, where he's not as direct. He tries to use skills down the channels and down the wings to work it with the fullbacks to beat the man. So I think he's just looked at it and said, as you touched on earlier there, midfield is a little bit weaker with Shelvey out. So he can pick that ball up and he can run and take it to the front three, which is what he did. And that's why I think he's coming. But yeah, he's been, during the game, there's the obvious things he was doing, but some of the passes he was playing, it was one early on, and it was a little move, I think it was Salah done a little turn to flick it to Firmino. Firmino backheeled it to Chamberlain and he put someone through. I think it's Trent on the right. And if you look, go back, it wasn't picked up that big, but if you look at that ball, it's with his left foot and it's absolutely beautiful. Right into Trent's path. He doesn't have
it's
to stop running to cross it.
It's confident. Yeah, he's getting the more
he's brilliant.
Quick.
He's doing everything we didn't think he would, really. Well, I didn't anyway.
Well,
I thought he'd be okay. I never thought he'd be this good.
I thought he'd be good.
Yeah, me and loved him from start, yeah.
I
love the way Grizz just jumped on top of that and went, yeah, it was definitely me and Ian that already was
me and Ian said.
I said it would be a more mobile Lallana. I said that at the very beginning, I think.
Yeah, you did. I do remember that. Yeah. But yeah,
you don't remember mine? You don't remember mine,
no? No, Grizz remembers yours, Grizz.
He'll never.
Do you know what I was going to say? I really love the sort of link-up and relationship they're building with sort of Salah, Ox and Trent on that right side.
Nice,
because he does prefer to put, even though Ox is everywhere, like sort of he's got that free role in midfield, free-ish role, but the relationship and the link-up play he's developing with, especially Salah, you know, the one-touch play sort of rolls into him, lays off, he knows exactly when to, see, that's where Lallana kind of breaks the play down. Sometimes he's accused of slowing the play down. He may not play that return, the wall pass, do you know what I mean? Back to Salah or back to Trent. Lallana would maybe want to do a turn there or sort of slow the play down. That's where I think Lallana is being used these days when we've got a lead and we need someone to get on there and just sort of slow the play down. Again, he was used for that role today. So to get to Gav's original question, what he asked you, I think Ox is...
You answered it for me now, yeah.
Can't even remember what I asked.
I know. I think Ox is definitely ahead of Lallana in the pecking order, well, even when everyone's fit.
If someone had to say to you, tell me Klopp's best midfield, who'd you put in? No one knows. What's his best midfield?
No, and you're that's right, and
but,
that's
but
I think.
I think yesterday was.
I think no, I don't know. You see, I think it's very hard to pick a best midfield three, and that's not because you know they're all the same level. I think there is players that are better at certain things than others. But like I said, if we get to the stage where we're picking a three or a two in midfield or whatever it is, and we're happy with it, that just shows how much this squad is coming on. I'm going to ask people on Periscope, because we're going to argue over this probably after the pod as well, but if it was Lallana or Ox in this midfield, who would you go for?
Or you can add Gilly.
I think Oxlade-Chamberlain and Lallana are both similar players, so I just want to see what people think. So I'll keep an eye on it, and I'll come back to it in a few minutes just to see what the general consensus is. Ian, I'll come back to you. And Oxlade-Chamberlain makes the fourth goal for that man again, Mo Salah. 24 league goals now, 32 in all competitions. I'm losing count. I'm genuinely losing count.
He's keeping up with our podcast, isn't he? Number of our podcasts.
Yeah.
49.
Yeah. But it's Salah again. It's the goal scoring continues. But, you know, if you look at the goal there, we nearly lose it in midfield. It gets to Chamberlain, and it's that burst of 10, 15 yards that opens up the whole pitch, and he plays in Salah, and it's a cue finish. And we seem to be getting this knack now, don't we? We're making sure we're getting ahead in games before half time, or if not one, maybe two. But we seem to be putting that pressure on and making sure we're getting a goal ahead and making sure we're not going in and giving them any sort of inspiration for the second half, as I put it.
So it's just about patience, mate. The 45th minute's exactly the same as the 16th, 17th, 18th, isn't it? Liverpool over the past few years, like you say, we start to get frustrated after 25, 30 minutes, and Coutinho will be trying, for all the good goals he scored, he'd put an awful lot in the stands as well, and you'd be frustrated, and he wouldn't be, you know what I mean, he'd be trying stupid shit. Whereas now there's just a lot, it's a lot more of a team effort. I think their best player yesterday was that Paul Dummett, but he makes a bad mistake for their first goal. For some reason, he charges out to close down what he thinks is going to be a pass to Oxlade-Chamberlain's right. And Oxlade, he leaves a big, massive gap in the back three. Oxlade-Chamberlain's a lot quicker than people give him credit for. He's very quick. Picks it up, drives through the first line of midfield. And then if there's one player you don't want to leave in the 18-yard box at the minute, it's Salah. It's not even... He gets a little bit lucky, or the keeper gets a little bit unlucky, whatever way you look at it. But when you scored like 76 goals in a season, you get that type of shit, don't you, that goes in. But they were really well drilled, Newcastle. They're hard to watch, man. It was a boring game, but like you say, for some reason, he has a rush of blood. That lad at the back comes charging out to close down the wrong player, and Ox just does him and carries on going. I don't know if he looks at the player to pass or what, but for some reason, their defender just comes charging out, and he just leaves a massive gap for like the league's most informed player, which is criminal, like.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. The Oxlade-Chamberlain part in the goal. Arsenal fans have told us that, you know, he tries hard. He's quite mobile, but he's a little bit unintelligent in what he does. That's what I've seen said about him from Arsenal fans. That could be just a case of him being bitter because they've lost him. I think behind it all, I think they rate him quite highly. But if you look at that goal, Matt, the burst of pace and then the timing of the pass and the weight of the pass, it still has to be done, doesn't it? It still has to be done properly to give Salah that chance to settle himself and score.
Yeah, he was on his toes, and it was one of the best saves of the season.
You can't wait to get to that, can you?
Can we just get to that, please? Yeah.
Chris, fuck you, man.
No, come on, I'll talk about it. It's exactly why he's in the team. The burst from midfield. I mean, he doesn't have to do much to get past that midfielder. He catches it just to the left of him. But it's just the acceleration and he's away. And as Ian said, the defender in the centre should have come across, but that's probably just them not talking to each other. But yeah, he's just, once he's pulled that defender in, I think it's quite easy for him. He just slips that man in and there's no way Salah's missing from there. Just through his legs. It was perfect.
Well, we say that, but go on, Ian. Go on.
I was going to say, an unintelligent player like Arsenal fans are saying there, he shoots. Do you know what I mean? A player who doesn't get his head up and doesn't look at, isn't aware of his surroundings, he runs 20 yards and he just has a long-range effort. A player with brains does what he's done. Do you know what I mean? And he's done it two different ways now. He's done it against Arsenal where he shot. Not Arsenal, sorry. City where he shot. And he's done it in this. So he's proven that he's not a one-trick pony. He can lay it off or he can shoot. He can do both.
I think the defender makes the decision very easy for him.
Oh, it's criminal defender,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, when
really
he comes
bad.
Across there, like if he shot, even if it went in, you're thinking you shouldn't be shooting now when the most informed winger in the world is open.
Yeah, but say, we know we're talking about Ox's intelligence and he would have shot for Arsenal. He has done stuff like that in the past where sort of, you're right, I think the improvement has come by playing with better players. I think there's been a lot of, yeah, I was just going to say, and from Klopp in training, that demands sort of always play in someone who's been in a better position for you than you. And that's one of the brilliant things about our forward three. They're always looking for the other, you know, for their fellow teammate. None of them are, well, he calls Salah greedy for goals, but we know what he means. Like, you know, he's like sort of deadly in front of goals. He wants those goals, but Ox's link-up play is getting better and better, and that was the one criticism the Arsenal fans, because I'm living in London, I took the piss out of Arsenal fans so much, and they were like, oh, take 40 million, you know, thank you very much, you know, we can't believe you've given us 40 million for it, but who looks the mugs now? I mean, does he look like a 40 million player player to you? I mean, if he was like playing for Leipzig, we'd say, yeah, 40 million, snap him up. Because the one thing that he lacked, people said, was sort of his final pass or his sort of game intelligence. And the last few games I've seen that improve dramatically. and the more assists, the more he plays with the players of the quality of Mane, Salah and Bobby, I think he's going to get better. But how old is he, Matt? About 24?
23?
24.
So we've got
25 in August.
We've got one of the finest English. We've got one of the finest English midfielders for 40 million at the peak of his career. So
not even. He's still young.
Going to get better. That's gonna get the mad thing about. Yeah. So all those Arsenal fans.
Just like that little laugh. I think if you look at Oxlade-Chamberlain when he was at Arsenal, he wanted to be in the midfield, a central midfield position. He usually ended up out wide and probably a front three. Then he ended up as a wing back. I remember him getting, he actually got torn apart at Anfield when we beat him 4-1 earlier. Was it 4-1 earlier in the season? We done them anyway. And he played wing back and we destroyed them. 4-0 I think it was. But to me it looks like people on here now, when we ask that question, mostly are coming back saying Oxlade-Chamberlain over Lallana for the moment. But a lot are saying when Alan gets off the toilet and stops shitting himself, he'll be back in the team for United as well. So again, there's more options and we're all comfortable with it, which is good. But I think
even Milner,
yeah, but yeah,
five games ago he would have been written off. Now there's people questioning why he wasn't in that team.
Absolutely. And I think the big thing around Oxlade-Chamberlain is Klopp. Klopp brings him in and he does play him wide the odd time. He brings him on for 10, 15 minutes here. And then he just gradually brings him in. And now you can see him. He's very, very comfortable putting him in the midfield three. With any other two around him, which is key as well. He's not putting him with the same players all the time. I think he's been a good signing. I think he's going to get better and better. And I think, you know, I don't think we've seen the best of him yet, which is probably a good thing. Right, on to Matt's favourite subject of this season so far, and probably of his life since supporting Liverpool, and it's that Carrier save. As much as we were in control and as routine as this was, that save from Carrier has a massive burden on the game, I think, and secondly, is world class. I'm going to say it's world class. Matt, I have to come to you first on it because I can't leave you waiting. It's a massive save, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. We were talking the other week how he moved to the left. Was it West Ham? And their player was coming down, and he was on his toes, and he planted his feet, and he couldn't get down to the right quick enough. Now this time, again, it's from the other side, but he's moving to his left again. But he moves in a little bit more of an arc this time instead of straight across. But once he's made that first little bounce across, he's still on his toes. He doesn't plant his feet. If you watch it, he stays on his toes, and he doesn't get down this time, but that's what gives him enough balance and stability to make the jump, because he is at full stretch. It's a great shot, and just staying on his toes where he was. I'm watching it right now.
You haven't stopped watching this. I'm online with you since about 7:10, and you're constantly looking over to where left.
So it's fucking beautiful. The way that man bun flies through the air, what more do you want? it's brilliant keeping. The big thing about it is we've seen that so many times in the past where teams have had nothing and they'll have a long range, a good effort, because it's not a bad effort. Like Wanyama, you get one of them, it goes in, and that's the game completely turned. How many times have we seen that? Now, this guy is now making important saves. He's actually winning those points. He's doing what De Gea does for United. Not to the extent that he does, but he is. He's winning. He's helping us win points. It's exactly what he wants. It's what I knew he would do if he just fucked that mini layoff, because he had far too many chances. This lad was written off far too early. We gave him 10 games at the start of last season, and our fans were on him in six. You got to remember, this was a 22-year-old lad who was the second best keeper in Germany, and he's moved abroad to a team where people he doesn't know. He's 22. It's a new league. It's a vile league as well, because people get stuck in, and we've jumped on him in six games. He should have been given all last season. He did. The mistake he made to get taken out weren't even bad mistakes. It was one game. I think he had two, was it? Southampton, the 3-3 maybe.
The Bournemouth game. He made about three mistakes, didn't he?
He made mistakes in that game, but which new players don't? It's ridiculous to take him out then, but I see why Klopp done it. I'm not blaming him because he does it with players, takes them out the limelight and gives them a bit of rest. But for our fans to jump on the second best keeper in Germany so quick, I was appalled. And that's why I'm so happy to see him doing well now. Most people are turning. I've got one lad on Twitter who's still not turning yet, but I'm working on him.
Oh, you get there. As the nicest person on Twitter, I reckon you can do it.
Yeah, I'm being very nice about it.
Just again, sorry, anyone that's worrying about Ian, Ian's not in a good way. He passed a life fitness test before this, and he barely passed it. Just another question for people on Periscope. If this was to continue, and this form was to continue from Karius, do you think that we would still bring in a goalkeeper in the summer, or do you think he would stay with Karius? You might have to consider the fact that Mignolet and Ward may leave, but what standard of goalkeeper would you bring in? Would it be a backup to Karius, or would it be someone to be number one? I'll just ask the people on Periscope that as well to keep that discussion going while we're here. Ian, that save yesterday, is it a sign of a confident goalkeeper and a fella getting more and more confident, as Matt says, he's getting that run in the team? And he feels on top form, and he feels like nearly invincible now. Not invincible, but he feels he can get his hand or his foot or any part of his anatomy to any ball now.
Yeah, it's to a point. I mean, you can be the most confident keeper in the world, and you don't save that. I think that comes down to his ability. Do you know what I mean? His natural ability. In Germany, he was an explosive keeper, in that you know what I mean? He's really athletic and he can get right across his goal from a standing position and stuff like that. But we haven't seen that in the Prem. I think this is the first save I've seen where I've genuinely thought, fucking hell, he's got mad skills. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, maybe two or three of the top keepers in the Prem saved that, and he saved it. So, and that's one of the first times it was truly world class. Do you know what I mean? Credit to him. You just said, would you still be signing a new keeper? I would. Because we've been down this road before, do you know what I mean? And if you were to say he's going to be like this for the next 10 years, then I'd say, no, don't buy a new keeper. But history suggests that we'd be naive not to sign. When a keeper like Alisson's available, I'd still be signing Alisson. I think he's one of the best keepers in the world, like.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the comments here as you're speaking, and the name Alisson just keeps coming up time and time and time again. A lot of people are saying that even if it is Alisson, we need somebody that's going to compete with him. I think Mignolet is done, and I think Ward is done because he has...
Mignolet's gone.
Listen, if Alisson is available, get him. If we can, like, as much as I like Karius, if we can improve on him, do we? Like, I'm not that loyal to a player that I would want the team to suffer over him. Like, if we can get someone better, get
it. You probably haven't mentioned Moreno for about 6 months.
Oh, he's too busy working on Emre Can's contract with him to be worried about.
That's done, lad, done. Now, again, with Robinson, I'm absolutely made up. Robinson is doing better to stay on the pitch over Moreno. But yeah, if we can improve, fucking do it. But if it's going to be someone competing with Karius, then fair enough. If he's competing with him, he's going to be at a good level. As long as it's not a Mignolet level of competing where it's just because he's there, we're putting him in. As long as it's a good keeper, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah, Grizz, I'll leave the final word to you on this. You know, people are saying Alisson all day. Like, they're flying in here. You know, Nat says Defo needs someone to keep Karius on his toes. The squad we have now, they all want to play. And everyone seems good enough to play at the moment. But for you, Grizz, in your expert opinion, do you think we still go and sign a goalkeeper regardless of what Karius does between now and the end of the season, no matter how positive it is?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? A lot of people are saying, sort of in terms of money-wise, you know, why spend sort of 60 million on a keeper when Karius is showing signs of improvement? I'm not bothered about the financial aspect of it. I'm with Ian on this. Like, if a quality keeper, no, sorry, a world-class keeper like Alisson wants to come to Liverpool and he's available for transfer, then we should be in for him. Karius is getting better and better. There's no one, even Matt's Twitter mate, can deny that. Karius is getting better and better. And what I like about Karius and what's also improving the defence is he's got this aura like VVD about him. where he's very calm and he's got this calming influence on the back four around him as well. And sort of the back four aren't scared of passing the ball back to him. Sort of, you know, he comes and claims. He's very active, as he's a very dynamic keeper. He's improving of that, there's no doubt. But if a world-class goalkeeper is available, then we still go for him. Alisson is still available. Alisson does want to come to us. Price-wise, is going to be tricky. But listen, I'm not worried about the finances. I just want the best players, as many brilliant players at Liverpool Football Club as possible. And Alisson is a brilliant goalkeeper. Competition-wise, look, my only worry about buying another... Because we're definitely going to buy a keeper, right, lads? We've all agreed that we're definitely going to buy a keeper. If we go into the market for a keeper thinking Karius is our number one and we want to buy another keeper as a backup, as competition, I think we fucked up too many times like that. How many crap backups have we bought? I mean, I don't even want to go through some of the names, but do you know what I mean? Some of them are, I think, porn stars or something now, aren't they? Some of our backup keepers. Matt, you would know.
I don't know what your point is. No.
What are you? I don't even know where you're going with this.
What I'm saying is, if we buy a goalkeeper, it's got to be better than Karius, and number one is going to be our number one. If we're going to the market saying, right, Karius is our number one, but we need to replace a Mignolet, then our track record for buying backup goalkeepers is poor. That's my point.
Yeah, no, I think if it comes to a goalkeeper in the summer, you know, there's been this argument in the WhatsApp group about the standard of goalkeeper. A lot of people think we'll sign him. We need to sign somebody on a level with Karius, you know, to compete, or somebody world-class, or somebody that's a dedicated number two to him. That's gone on. I think if you make your squad better in the signing of a goalkeeper, with Ward and Mignolet more likely leaving, if you make your squad better, you know, well, I don't see a problem. I really don't. I hope Karius has a brilliant, you know, 10, 12, 14 games, whatever's possibly left it, between now and the end of the season, including the Champions League run. I hope he's exemplary. A couple of people have said that United away will be a big test from next week. I agree. Going into a game like that, as massive as that, let's see how it goes. But look, I'll move on. Let's get to the Mane goal. Ian, I'll give you a full shout on this. It all starts with Bobby Firmino picking someone's pocket, because that's what he does. And then from then on in, we decide we're only allowed to touch the ball once. We're moving up the half the length of the pitch, and Mane sticks it away. And for someone that we questioned a couple of weeks ago about his form and about his input and his output, great to see him getting another one. I think that's three games in a row now.
Yeah, he's in good. I don't even think he played that well. As a matter of fact, I thought he was quite poor, but he's such a threat in and around the box. Do you know what I mean? Like, Firmino picks it up. Does Firmino originally lose it? Is it Firmino's pass originally? But then he wins it back, which he does 38 times a game.
Yeah, he picks it. And I've seen this during the week, people saying he tackles from the blind side, and another stat during the week that he's actually won more tackles in the league than anyone else this season, which is
a lot more tackles. Yeah, he picks it up.
I told you, best DM in the league.
That's a stunning stat.
He's the false six. He's the best false six we got.
False six, yeah.
False
six. But where he wins that, he's like well inside our own half. And he doesn't bust the gut to get back up to the edge of the 18-yard box. He's just got real good awareness around him. And it's just nice football player around, really. Any other season, I mean, that's one of our goals of the season. It's probably not even in our top 10 this season. I mean, that's how well we're playing, and just nice football into Firmino. Firmino with a lovely little like Bergkamp-esque pass. You know, number nines can't really play. Out and out number nines don't really link up play like that well.
It's all
made by Mane's first touch. His first touch gets it out of his feet, gets away from the defender, opens it up, and it's just a mustard finish. Brilliant, brilliant goal. Like, the game didn't deserve that goal because the game's shit, but they're the type of goals that Liverpool score now on a regular basis. FIFA goals.
I'm getting bored of them. They're getting boring. They're really good goals.
Do you know what the thing is, Matt, though, about that goal? You know, when you see a team set up with three or five at the back, you know, three centre-halves, they're trying to look at probably packing the midfield with three. So when you see that sort of team, you're thinking, they want us to get wide. They want us to hit crosses in the box, and the likes of Lascelles and all these lads. You know, they'll deal with these crosses. And if you look at both their goals yesterday, Matt, and let's stick with the second one, right down the middle of the pitch, one touch movement, and then the lads in from out wide that they're trying to, you know, literally say, give him the ball out there and we'll defend it from there. The lads from wide are then fucking darting into the positions where they're all of a sudden they're central and we're scoring. And it's 5-6 touches right through the middle of the pitch where they want us to play and we're still scoring goals, man.
What's the question?
The question is, Matt, what do you think? Was it a good goal, Matt? Come here, tell us about the carry
to save. It was perfect. It was training ground. as you said, one touch, triangles. But it's not just that, it's the movement. So how, as a centre-back, how do you defend one against the number nine who's not even there? How do you defend against the number nine who's starting it from the false six position? Two, how do you defend from a winger that is running across your whole back line? You can't. It's pulling people out of position. And then if someone does follow him, and I mean, Mane is very cute there of what he does. It's tight space and he does it beautifully. But if he doesn't get it, there is a massive overlap on and loads of space for Robertson, who is there.
He's in
the space waiting for it. So what we've got more than one option for that pass. And it's all about the movements of the front three, which just drags defenders. I mean, their defence was pretty shocking the whole game anyway, so it's not like we're up against PKC Milan, like, but what they're doing there and what they've done all season, why they've scored 66 goals between them, is because they're moving, they're working for each other and they're looking to create, one, gaps for each other and, two, space for themselves. And it's clicking. Yeah. It's clicking beautifully for the last 20-odd games.
Absolutely. That's more or less that goal covered. Grizz, I want to come to you about something.
So your non-question answered?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And if you wanted to talk about carriers for a couple of seconds there, I would have let you.
Well, I'll actually drop something in. I did see a stat on him. In the last four games, he has been involved in three goals or something. Within the build-up play of three goals, whereas in the last 20 for Mignolet, he was involved in four or something.
I know where you got that stat from as well. You fucking arselick. Go on.
it's a good stat.
At Scout Shell says, we all look like the lads that got banned from the gym. We're going to get to that. Give us a few minutes. Grizz, I want to come to the last thing on the game itself.
I've got banned from prime schools as well.
And it's the chance at the end that Salah has. He races away. He gets a nice touch at the edge of the box and he's in on goal and Lascelles takes him out. And the referee is a good distance away, so he's looking to his linesman and the linesman completely and utterly bottles it. I've seen an angle today from the side of the pitch where the linesman is not too far off being up a play, and how he doesn't give that is beyond me. And one, how does he not give it? And two, did you like the reaction of the Liverpool players, the way they were fuming about it? In the last minute of injury time when the game is safe and the Liverpool fans are still fuming, or the Liverpool players are still fuming about it. Did that impress you as well?
Gav, you know how much we love that. I love that fact that was a routine Reds performance, right? We've become accustomed to sort of feeling, you know, good about ourselves after a 90-minute set against any team, right? But the fact that Klopp was livid on the touchline, even though it was an awful decision. Let's first talk about the decision. It was an awful decision. The linesman shit himself. He was the opposite of the other linesman against Spurs. Was it Spurs, isn't it? Yeah. He fucking, you know, he wanted to just be part of the show. This one didn't want to be seen. He didn't want the cameras at him. Do you know what I mean? The ref, you can see the ref looking at the linesman like, well, talk to me. He just shits himself, or he's probably on mute or something. Do you know what I mean? But what I loved about Klopp's reaction was he was a winner. Klopp was livid at that. And I like that. I want him to put, fuck all the morals. I want him to put pressure on the refs, get on the pitch. Next time it won't happen. Do you know what I mean? People will see that. Klopp wants decisions to go his way, and I like the way he's doing it. Charged on the pitch at the end. How many times have we seen Mourinho do that, Alex do that, Ferguson, you know, even Conte. R1's always coming on and hugging the players. This time he was straight up to the ref. All right, he hugged a few on the way. You know, he's got to hug his couple of his favourites.
He has a hug ratio, but, doesn't he?
These were quick hugs, like, get the fuck out of my way. I'm going to seize the ref here. And I loved it. The players were surrounded. It was a diabolical decision. I mean, you know, I was actually looking for VAR. This is where we need Is it Var?
He's just, I love the way you shot this stuff. I can't believe you didn't say Vivid this week or Ta.
This is where VAR would help.
And the ghastly thing about all this is you're shortening all this stuff, right? And when someone writes LOL, you're nearly asking, what the fuck does that mean? So you've actually taken this to a different level without even learning the basics. It's mad.
Listen, so VAR is important in these choices. It's good that, was it this week that we heard that it's being implemented or something, isn't it?
God only knows.
It got announced today. It's at the World Cup as well.
Yeah, the mess they made. At the Spurs game the other night. They made an absolute mess of it at Spurs the other night.
It's just these officials in this country that are making a mess of it. It's working near enough fine everywhere else.
Yeah.
It's just the communication between the crowd, the officials, is a bit poor at the moment, and the time it's taking. But that would improve. And decision. I mean, imagine that was sort of, we needed a win, and that was the last minute, you know, the chap's running through and he doesn't give that. I mean, that was the most obvious foul. I mean, I don't think it was a penalty. I think it was just outside.
No, it was outside the area. But the ref gives it. I think he gives a pen. You know what I mean? Because it looks like a pen, doesn't it?
It looks like a
pen,
You don't even need
VAR for that. That is just
Say it. You wanted to
but,
say
but
it.
The guy, you pull down. But the guy thing about it is, if it's not a foul, why isn't he booking Salah? Yeah, but if they decide it's not a foul, why aren't they booking Salah for going down?
Not every time a player goes down is it a dive, like.
Yeah, but you could have argued that the ball has got away from Salah.
I think, or, you know, what he's done,
he could have come along with any arguments, but they're making no decision on this.
He's judged it as a coming together more than a push. But that's where the linesman is the worst person out of all this, because his arm is so blatantly on his back. He does the pushing action. It's all down to the linesman. That's absolutely terrible.
I think if it's 0-0, I think he gives that.
Yeah, he's done on the score more than the game.
You're at the death. It's 2-0. He's probably thinking it's not the end of the world if we don't give it. You know what I mean? But if we finish third by one goal,
To be honest, guys, I know we won 2-0 and we don't really want to talk about the officials, but I really thought he was crap all game anyway. I genuinely don't think he gives that, Ian. He was that crap. He was awful in that game. So, look, Benitez's tactics, if they were implemented by an Allardyce or a Pulis, we would have said, you know, fucking wankers. But his team left their foot in a few times, especially on Mane and Salah. They got some treatment, they did, the lads, in that game. There was a lot of physical challenges going in and you know, I know. Do you know how Pep always sort of talks about protecting his players? Maybe Klopp will start coming out and talking about, or he should, in my opinion, start coming out and talking about protecting the likes of Mane, Bobby and Salah. Because as we've sort of become feared now, a lot of teams are going to look to sort of rough up our players. And I think Salah got a lot of rough treatment. I don't think it was mentioned enough. You know, I thought he was quite badly treated by some of the players and the officials not getting given the decisions. And Salah's not a diver like a fucking Delilah Ali and Kane, right? Salah's quite strong and stays on his fucking feet a lot. So you can't even accuse him of that. And he got some rough treatment, man. I felt a bit bad for him.
Yeah,
well, send him a box of roses.
We've a lot to get through for the last. We've about 10 minutes or so left. I just want to go through things really quickly. Man of the match, Ian. I'll start with you. Who was your man of the match?
Hendo.
By
a distance. I thought Ox first half, but then he faded. Henderson got it for the whole game.
Yeah, okay. Matt, who are you going to go with?
Karius,
of course you are.
don't
even try to change your statement.
Wanker.
Yeah, I know he is, but look, that's... Listen, give him his fucking day in the sun, will you? Grizz, who are you going with, man of the match?
Ox. I think he was the difference. I think Hendo was very close. But I'd go for Ox just for the difference he made in sort of that first goal, which turned the game.
Okay, I'm going to go with Ian. I'm going to go with Henderson. I think he gets on the ball lots. He plays the right pass at the right time. He plays the tackling passes a lot of the time that gets us going. And he's being beaten with a stick for a lot of the time he plays. That he's a crab and he plays the sideways and backwards. I think yesterday he's seen what Henderson can do when he's on it. And I'm one that doubts him, and I think I doubt his place in the squad and his future at Liverpool, but I hope I'm 200% wrong on him, and I hope he stays fit and continues to play games like that for Liverpool. Lads, quickly on to just to, now very quickly, I just want to see what you think on Porto. We played them Tuesday night. We're 5-0 up in the fourth leg. We don't know what way they're going to approach it. They'll probably go, they could change around everything and say, look, this is done. We'll send out a second string and concentrate on our domestic stuff. But Matt, do you think we go strong, or do you think we start? Would you think we see the majority of the bench yesterday, for argument's sake, playing on Tuesday?
No, not at all. I think we do what we've done all season. We rotate a couple of midfielders. I would like to see one of the front three rotated this time, though. Maybe give Salah a break. He does that picture with, is it the oxygen thing on his foot or the ice thing on his foot? So I would maybe bring Ingsy in for Salah and try and give Bobby a rest at some point, maybe 60 minutes. But, I mean, it's Europe. You can't take anything for granted. We're here. Let's not mess it up. Defence stays the same. Carrier stays in. I'll say defence, maybe Gomez or Moreno. But just a slight change. Play pretty strong.
All right, Ian. Strong, or do you reckon you'll see the squad being used in a big way on Tuesday night?
A bit in between, mate. I think he'll change both full-backs. You play Gomez and Moreno. I think it depends who's going to start against Man U. So you'll get a good indication of who's going to start in the midfield against Man U by who plays against Porto. Usually I'd say rest Bobby, but he's the type of player that doesn't like to be rested. He needs to keep going, doesn't he? He's a bit like Suarez in that respect, and that it takes him a while to warm up. So I don't know, maybe drop one or two of them, but I don't think it'll be wholesale. I think maybe Ings in, or maybe even give Solanke a game. But it won't be nothing crazy, like. But I've read that they've got about five players out, and they're going to drop the rest anyway. Yeah, I've heard they're coming with the B side anyway. So easy game.
Yeah, Chris, you know, with that information there, they've 4 or 5 out, and they're probably going to bring a B team. I think the discussion isn't around, like, you know, the tie is all but over. You know, if you're going to say we're in any danger, I think you're a bit mad in the head. But, you know, is it something that we make 7 or 8 changes, or is it something that you make 2 or 3, and you, as Matt says, you keep that momentum going, and we just keep going as we go, and don't make 7 or 8 changes just for the sake of it, because I believe rhythm is a massive thing in this team.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Klopp's a big believer in this rhythm type thing. So, I mean, ideally, if all of us were sort of choosing a team, I think maybe most of us would say, rest everyone. Like, they're not coming to sort of play. It's a formality for them. They're in a title race, a close title race back in Portugal. This is, you know, it's a free hit for the map, this one.
And it's home. So, yeah. It's home as well. We're not travelling away.
Yeah,
none of the games lately have been difficult. We haven't been, like, pressing like fuckers on any team to try and win it. The last difficult one we had like that was Tottenham. Newcastle, it was an easy run out. Porto is going to be an easy run out. We're not going to be pressing them every 5 minutes.
It's not about pressing them. It's about injuries can happen, anything just like that. Contact injuries is the biggest thing. So, I personally would rotate the fullbacks, as he says. I'd play Klavan and Matip. I'd play Gini. I shouldn't reveal the team. I'll reveal the team later, actually.
is this where you pretend that it's your prediction?
But look.
That should be banned.
Yeah, it's a given, I think, minimum seven changes.
Okay. I'd probably go somewhere around 4 to 5 changes. I think if you can protect, maybe if you can give, you know, you're looking at United at the weekend, and it's a massive game in both, just because it's United, and secondly because where we are in the league, and a lot will go on when they play Palace Monday, and I think they have a European game, don't they, a couple of days after we play them. I don't know, 4, 5, 6 changes. We'll see how it goes.
Keep that defence, though, because that defence is still quite new.
Yeah.
Even though it's still new, we keep them together.
Yeah, I think in any other circumstance, I'd be like saying, look, if you can change as many of them as you can, change them. But I'd make sure 100% Carries is in goal. I don't want any break in his rhythm. In midfield, we've options up front. Like you said, Solanke, Ings. The fullbacks can be changed. There's plenty of room to move things around there. But once they had them in the right frame of mind for... It's Sunday United, isn't it?
Saturday early.
So, look, that game is probably a dead rubber on Tuesday night. It's just more about the changes and how we do it. Quickly, lads, before we record next week, but we're going to play United. Just a quick prediction from you from the United game. We're going to Old Trafford in great form. We're literally neck and neck with them. Ian, what do you reckon for next Sunday? Well, I'm just going to write these down for next week anyway, that's all.
1-1.
1-1, okay. Grizz?
You know my prediction. 2-2. 2-2.
2-2 to us, okay. Matt?
Smashing them 2-0.
Smashing them 2-0. I'm going to go with 4-1 Liverpool.
Yeah,
I think I'm best. No, do you know what? I'm a fucking Jonah. Like, if I say 4-1, the chances are we're getting beat 3-0 and have 4-1.
I think if they had a goal, I think if they come at us, I think we're easily capable of scoring that many goals against them. But it's just a negative
match. I think he's going to come at us. I think he has.
Nah, he won't at all.
No, he's not, because I tell you, Grizz, if he wins on Monday night, he's a point ahead of us again, or 2 points ahead of us. He'll happily take a draw. And he just continued trundling on.
No, you're right. I'm wrong.
And he's watching City beat Chelsea today, and he's then 9 points ahead of fifth place, and that's all he's going to get.
You're right, Gav. You're right.
I know that. I always am, especially when I'm talking to you. Right, lads. Last week we were having a chat on this, and Grizz has had loads of different diets. He's pretended to join the gym. He has taken photos on a bridge in tracksuits and pretended that he's training, and we had enough. But in all seriousness, the four of us slag each other all the time about our weight, what this, that, and the other. Usually the radius of our heads comes into it. But we were talking during the week and we decided, right, let's sort this out, because it's getting out of hand. We do want to do something with regards to losing our weight individually. So we said, look, let's make it a team effort. And we decided that we were going to try to lose 100 pounds in weight between the four of us. So that was it. We were going to do that. Let's do it. What we done was we all took videos of ourselves, weighing ourselves, and we sent them all to Matt, because Matt is the secretary of the Fatback Four. He has all the videos.
And the nicest man on Twitter.
So guilty. This is how it went on. The week progressed. We all sent videos. I think the last one was today. I think Ian sent one in today. And was the last video, so we all know our weights. And we said, right, we'll give it to the Champions League final to see if between the four of us we can lose 100 pounds in weight between the four of us. Grizz is going to struggle.
What do you mean I'm going to struggle?
Oh, you're going to struggle. You told me earlier you're going to shave your head to get yourself in the zone.
I've got a treadmill underneath right here. I'm actually sat on a treadmill.
Ian is comfortable. You can't see it. Ian is comfortable with all this. He's confident. Matt doesn't have enough weight to lose, I don't think, so he's going to be the one that loses the
league. I'm lending him some of mine.
Yeah.
You can all chip in.
It's like Bitcoin.
The individual one is the person who loses the highest percentage of body weight of the original body weight.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm fucked.
So last week, Grizz was offering up a box of Ferrero Rocher. That's Grizz messing with the connection on the side of his iPad as we speak. He offered up a box of Ferrero Rocher for the winner between myself and himself. Ian and Matt decided they want to get involved, so we decided just between the four of us we were going to do this, lose 100 pounds in weight. Then we had a couple of suggestions from families and friends with regards to, if you're going to do this, why not do it for a good cause? So we decided, okay, what'll we do? We contacted Alder Hey Hospital and the charity, Alder Hey Charity. We suggested to them that we are going to do this regardless, and we're going to do it where we're going to try to lose 100 pounds in weight, but we're also going to try to raise some money, if possible, for Alder Hey. They were more than happy. They were more than happy to allow us to do this. They thanked us, and we decided, okay, so we set up a Just Giving page. It's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/FB4-100-pound challenge. Now,
that's a hyphen dash, not a forward dash, sorry.
And that's a mouthful. Don't worry, that'll appear on the trippers.
You can also text as well.
You can text. We will have the text number for you ASAP.
I got it here.
Do you have it, Matt? Go ahead.
So you can text FBAC, that's F back, 64. And then the amount you want to pay, so £5, £10, £600, whatever you want,
$600.
To £770. So it's FBAC64, however much you want, to 770. And I'll be putting that on the Twitter as well.
Okay, so the Twitter page will give you the information with regards to. the Just Giving page, also the text you can do, because on the Just Giving page you have to give, I presume, card details, stuff like that, and you can donate whatever. Whereas the text, you can just text it and it'll take it off you, which is great.
Can I just say, Gav, before you carry on, the locals and the people in the Northwest will know what Alderay is. People outside of England may not. Alderay is a children's hospital. It deals with some of the kids there. It's heartbreaking that you see how sick they are. There's kids with cancer, there's kids with terminal disease, there's kids with, do you know what I mean, there's kids who are Everton fans. It's bad news. So it is a brilliant cause, do you know what I mean? It's where you see the Liverpool and Everton players go every Crimbo to see the sick kids. That's Alderay Hospital, for people who don't know.
Yeah, and just to let you know that we genuinely started this as just the four of us having, it was going to be a competition between the four of us, until family and friends of all four of us nearly at the same time suggested this, and we decided, okay, let's go with this. So we've gone with it. It's Alderhay Hospital. That's going to be the charity. It's the £100 challenge. But the other thing is, we don't have to do it alone. So this is, sorry, you're probably copping on as to why these two fucking idiots are wearing the stuff in their head now. Grizz is warming up for a big curry there, you can see him.
But I've lost about 3 ounces already, son.
Good stuff. But
hey, how much do you reckon Tino could lose if he joined it?
Oh, Jesus.
I reckon if he... Tino's
probably
anyway.
2 stone wet through, you know what I mean?
Nah, mate, Tino already looks like the boy in the striped pyjamas. He'd be fucked if he lost any more weight.
Yeah, no.
Tino couldn't lose pajamas. His virginity, mate, never mind weight.
Well, listen, Tino, don't mind them, I can see you watching there. But no... family and friends suggested this, so we went with it. We Alderhay was suggested to us, so we went with that. But look, we don't have to do it alone. What you can do is, if you want to join this, and there's plenty of people out there who want to lose weight, but if you want to join, get a video together. We will get you an email address to send it to. That'll be also on the Twitter page.
DM me
at MattRoberts_29.
Listen, if you send me over your weight that you're on now, I'm not putting any weights on Twitter at all. No. Send me it over. Forget the video. Don't need to do that. And then each week, do you want to send me an update, and I'll we'll read out who the biggest percentage losers are between us and then our listeners as well.
Yeah, and as well as that, if people join in and decide that they want to do this, and it's a little bit of a competition between, say, the Fatback Four and everyone else, so we can see who actually does the most. There will be a winner out of the Fatback Four, but there could be an overall winner that's outside of us four. If you want to get involved, that means that we have more people.
You can get a mug. We'll give you a mug and a t-shirt. You just have to pay the posters and packaging.
You can wear my old
which
pants.
Is €27.
And we'll put four Ferrero Rochers into the mug and send it to you. But no, if you want to get involved, it means that you're keeping fit, you're losing weight, it's for a charity, and you can get your family and friends to donate to that page. We will have all the information up soon after this podcast on the Trippers Twitter feed. And yeah, let's see how we go.
Next season is going to be called the Flatback Four.
Yeah.
What's the last date, Gav?
Last game of the season, Champions League final. It's our last game.
26th of May, yeah.
And have we set ourselves a monetary target minimum?
I said 500, but literally what anyone can give.
500 pounds. If we could raise £500, it'd be brilliant. If we raise any more than that, we'll buy Chris a curry. Do you know what I mean? But £500. There's enough people who follow us can give a quid. Do you know what I mean?
Darren Page on the Perry said next year we're going to be called the Beach Body Back Four.
Yeah, it's an idea.
I wouldn't go to the beach with Chris. Fuck off.
Yes, you would, you liar.
You would. You want to see the amount of ice cream that counted for you.
Can you imagine me chasing Ian Baywatch?
Have you seen, what's that advert, Martini and the big fat guy in the ball, he's walking along the beach?
Oh, shouldn't come for it.
Yeah, that's Chris.
But anyway, Chris, you're shaving your head to get in the zone, is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Ian, what's your preparation?
This week, mate, try not to die so far. I've already done a bit of it this week. I'll do it easy.
Yeah.
My worry's Chris.
Yeah. Matt is in.
Don't worry about me.
I'm picking up Matt's slack.
I've stocked up. I'm going to do what I'm going to eat. I'm going to finish these tonight.
Yeah.
I actually feel quite down because I'm actually going to bid these farewell tonight. And I say, after this, that's it.
I'm on it.
Yeah. So, now look, as somebody says there, £1 from each follower, and you'll smash £500.
Exactly.
Probably will.
Absolutely.
But what we're trying to do here is we're doing it for ourselves. We are doing it for ourselves because it's something that's been since the Fatback Four started, and before that, we've absolutely taken the piss out of each other about our weight constantly, and usually the circumference, size, volume of our heads. But it's something that we are doing. We're going to do it regardless. But if people want to get involved, like I said, join in, send Matt your way. We update Matt every week. We will promise to do it on the podcast every week, and we'll see how we're getting on. And as well as that, the people that join in with us, they tell their family, they tell their friends, then people send a text, then people go online, donate some sort of money, and let's see how much we can get to. But look, that's been...
I might ask the doctors to put my appendix back in.
Yeah, Matt had his appendix
for the scales
this week.
So a little bit early.
Extreme
really.
Measures.
That's like £2, isn't it?
That's proper extreme measures, Matt. That's what we call dedication. Fucking getting your appendix out just for weight loss.
Okay.
Just a week.
What a wanker.
Just taking the piss now, isn't he, Chris? But listen, that's it. We're done. That's the Fatback Four. We'll see it again next week. As I said, keep an eye on the Trippers Twitter page, and we'll have all the details on there, keeping you constantly updated. And yeah, let's see how we go. See you next week. Over now.